Your Honor, Monell Nichols, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant today, Mr. Jason Sellers. This was a modification of child support case, and the child support was modified from its original amount of $96 to $712. This was for three children. Now, at first glance, that may not seem like a whole lot for three children, but we've got to keep in mind that the appellant is earning $16 an hour, and on that $16 an hour, he has seven people to support, including himself. He has himself, his wife, his stepchild, who resides with him full-time and for whom no one else provides support, that is in the record, and his biological child that he had with his new wife. That's his family of four. And then he has three biological children, and those are the other three that he has to support. We have a couple problems with the child support amount that was ordered according to our position. And the two issues are the way that the child support was calculated, and that we believe that the interdependent arithmetic method under the Prochaska calculation was not followed. We would urge the court to compare our child support calculation against that was offered by the state, especially looking at that three-step Prochaska calculation process. The big part where the calculations differ is not in the numbers that we used. We used the same numbers for the income and that sort of thing. It was in whether or not to apply a deduction for the other family's children. And under Prochaska, there is supposed to be a deduction for the other family's children in that interdependent arithmetic method. And that argument is more fully explained on pages 23 to 25 of my brief. If the court has time, that is a great place to look for more explanation on that. The other problem with the calculation is this question about the basic subsistence limitation.
Before you go there, Ms. Nichols, back to the support of the other family, is the primary dispute in the numbers between the state's calculation and yours the failure to account for the stepchild?
No. It is not in the failure to account for the stepchild. I'm so glad that you asked that because I definitely wanted to clarify that. It's not in giving credit for the stepchild. We understand that he's a stepchild unless he's adopted. There is no credit for him. We understand that. It's in the failure to give a deduction on the reciprocal calculations for the other family's children. And that deduction is one that needs to be given. And so that is where the discrepancy exists. The other discrepancy that we had was in which basic subsistence limitation to apply. There are actually, in our opinion, respectfully, two different basic subsistence limitations in the state of Nebraska. One is the good old standard 973 that's in the statute. It specifically says in the statute, for one person, 973, or the basic subsistence limitation as provided in the federal poverty guidelines. That very important key word, or, as I said in my brief, is not cloaked with mystery. It has a distinctive meaning, and the legislature put that in there for a reason. We have one basic subsistence limitation, which is meant to apply to an obligor who is only a single person and has only themselves to support. Therefore, they get less of a deduction versus the obligor that has themselves and a family to support. This is where we're comparing Justin Bieber to Mike Brady in terms of child support, and it's just not fair when you have one person obligated to support himself and six other people versus one person who's living by themselves and has no one else to support.
If you do look at the Federal Register and look at the amounts allocated for the poverty guidelines for a larger family, what would the number be in this case?
Yes, the number would be under the federal poverty guidelines contained in exhibit number 4, they give an annual guideline. So if we look at the annual guideline and we divide that by 4 for the four people in the household, then
What's the annual number?
The annual number is $23,850 for a family of 4 divided by 12 to arrive at the monthly BSL of $1,987.50.
And that would be total family income, correct? So was there evidence in the record of your client's wife's income?
Yes, she is a stay-at-home mother, and the reason for that is because on $16 an hour with two children, even if she was to go to work and earn minimum wage, which is what her capacity is, by the time she gets paid minimum wage and they have to pay daycare for two children, it's not going to make any sense for her to be out of the home working when she could be in the home providing services that they need.
So his was the only source of income
his
for
is the
family.
Only source of income for the entire four. So the correct basic subsistence limitation would be the 1987-50. Now, the other argument that we had is that, yes, this is the correct basic subsistence limitation to use, for
and,
sure.
And his net was, what, 1,800?
Yes, it was around 18.
So you're saying his net is already below the basic subsistence for four, assuming four is the right number rather than three.
Yes.
But that, if that's the case, then what do we do?
In that case, we go to the next child support guideline, which says that when a person's income is going to be, when the basic subsistence limitation applies, then we're going to go with either $50 or 10% of the income to determine the minimum amount of child support. And that is what we did in this case. We went ahead and applied that at the higher amount to arrive at the 176. Now, I know that that sounds very low for three children, but we are dealing with some very low-income earning families here, and we also need to consider the relative circumstances of these parties.
But does that fly against the tenet that all the children should be treated relatively equal? Aren't we then treating the afterborn child more favorably to the three previous children?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so, and the reason why is because we have one obligor. He's got to support all these children the best way that he can possibly. And these other three children are receiving lots of state benefits through their mother. And it specifically says in the case law that when there are multiple families involved in the calculation of the child support, then the court is to consider the relative incomes of both parties, including the other parent of the subsequent children, and should do so in a manner that does not benefit one family at the expense of another. In this case, the other three children's mother, the former Mrs. Sellers, she has been on state assistance for years. She doesn't work. She has no plan of working.
She worked in the two previous years prior to trial.
She had worked somewhat. She had worked off and on, but she has not worked a full 40-hour week in at least the last 5 years. And she testified and admitted to that trial.
So that's okay for the current Mrs. Sellers, but not the former Mrs. Sellers. Is that what you're suggesting to us?
No, Your Honor, I'm not. I'm simply suggesting that that has been her pattern of employment over several years, that that pattern has not changed, and that she has no intention to change it. When I asked her, do you plan on looking for another job, she said no. I'm fine where I'm at, and I'm fine on the state assistance. My client's wife would like to work. She would like to work outside the home, but it doesn't make sense financially because they can't qualify for any other assistance. If she does that, and they weren't on assistance at the beginning of this case, which takes me to one of the fundamental portions of this argument. The basic purpose of child support was originally designed to keep people off of welfare and off of state assistance. It was to make the obligors responsible for their families and to encourage people to work and support their families. Here we have one family who is refusing to work, does not want to work, has no plans to work, and is living on state assistance and is getting the benefit of child support, and did not admit that they had a live-in boyfriend who supports them and lives with them, along with several other assets, versus my client, who has had a very rough life, got out of prison, got a job, completely built himself up, pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He has a job. He supports his family. He stayed out of trouble. He's working very hard. All of this despite having a very serious medical condition, diverticulitis, which is inflammation of the intestinal tract. He's had three surgeries in the 18 months preceding this trial, over $30,000 in medical bills, almost $14,000 of which were uncovered by insurance, which he had to pay out of pocket, all at the same time that this child support is going on. He still has the condition, and he still continues to suffer from it. So there are certainly other compelling circumstances for the court to have considered when determining the amount of child support. And we offered that evidence, and it was accepted in terms of his medical bills. That was in Exhibit Number 1. And it specifically shows on there that the amounts on there that totaled almost the $14,000, that was what was uncovered. That's what he owes after the application of insurance. Along with the basic subsistence limitation and that The other issue was the issue of retroactive support. Previously, this court has said that where current and retroactive support amount to 29% of an obligor's net monthly income, and they have other children to support, then the award is disproportionate and outweighed by the equity of the circumstances. Here, this award, considering only current support without even considering the retroactive, amounts to 39% of this man's net income. It leaves him with about $1,100 a month on which to support his family of four. And what's awful is that because of the award of retroactive support, then the state is taking out additional monies to account for that retroactive support, the arrears that he walked out of this judgment with.
At a stopping point, you're out of time. So
yes.
I ask you to wrap it up.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Claudine Thorne. I'm a deputy county attorney in the Lincoln County Attorney's Office. I'm appearing today on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska as intervener in this proceeding. My office did initially file the complaint for modification of child support in this case, and the original trial was conducted back in June of 2014. You'll see from the transcript, I was not the actual deputy county attorney who conducted the hearing. She has now left our office, so I am taking up on the appeal. Just a couple of things that I want to touch on that Ms. Nichols brought up during her argument, and then if you have any questions, I can cover those as well, too. First off, as far as the new modified child support amount, my understanding of the case law in the state of Nebraska is that when the court decides to take into account a subsequent born child, we need to try to do that as fairly and equitably to all the children involved in the case. The state in this case did not in any way object to there being a consideration for Mr. Sellers' subsequent born child with his current wife. And in fact, the calculations that were marked as Exhibit 13 and offered into evidence and accepted that were prepared by the state of Nebraska did take into account this subsequent born child. We did it differently than what Ms. Nichols proposed, but I think if I can explain just a little bit about that, it might make it a little clearer as to what we were doing in an attempt to treat the three children in this case as equally as the child in his marriage. Also, we did not take into account the stepchild. I don't think there's any provisions in the Nebraska Child Support Guidelines that allow for that, so we look solely at the one subsequent born child. Exhibit 13 actually had two parts to it. First off, the last calculation was a calculation we used taking into account Mr. Sellers' income and his income alone and what his child support obligation would be for four children, the three in this case and the one in the subsequent relationship. When we came up with that amount, it averaged out to $234 per child. Then on the first page, then we gave him a deduction off his gross income for the $234, which was the child support for the subsequent born child, Quentin. Then we calculated out then what the child support would be for three children in this case, and that's where we came up with the $712. Ms. Sellers, now goes by Ms. Rodriguez, we imputed income to her at minimum wage 40 hours per week, since at the time of trial, the job that she had been doing, the circumstances had changed. She was doing respite care for an elderly woman who went into the nursing home shortly before trial. So we imputed income to her. She did testify at trial that she is capable of working and that she has been working. I think Ms. Nichols' characterization of Ms. Rodriguez's work history is somewhat inaccurate and unfair. I believe she testified that she has always attempted to work. She does have three children in her home that she is also taking care of, just as Mr. Sellers and his current wife have one child in their home that they're taking care of.
Ms. Thorne, is there any case law support for the manner in which the state calculated the child support in this case?
I don't believe so. What I would cite to the court is the court cases in particular, I would cite a more recent case that was released after my brief was filed. Schwartz versus Schwartz, which was filed in January of this year, and the cite on that is 289 Nebraska Reports 960. In that case, it just talks about the trial court has the discretion to look at subsequent born children, and how they calculate that deduction has to be done in a way that doesn't benefit one family at the expense of another. So I can't point to specific case law that gives you that exact calculation. We found that mathematically, if you look at the percentages on the gross income for the 234 for Quentin in the subsequent relationship, and then you take the 712 and break it down for the three children, that comes out to roughly $237.33 for each child. So we thought that that was quite close, about the closest you can get with children of subsequent relationships.
And what was the result of the interdependent math calculations that Ms. Nichols did to the poverty guideline?
Yes, Ms. Nichols did calculations, which I think her interdependent arithmetic calculations were Exhibit 4, and it showed that it would be a $665 for three children.
As opposed to yours was the
712, yes.
Thank you.
And then I want to go into this basic subsistence limitation, too. There again, if you accept Ms. Nichols' argument that the basic subsistence limitation should be as high as what she's alleging, it would break it down to $176 per month for the three children in this case. Based on her calculations, then, you have $58.67 going to each child in this case, and Quentin got a deduction, that's the child of the subsequent relationship, got a deduction of $375. So the children in this case are equated at $58.67 apiece, and the child in the second, in the marriage, gets $375, which to me does not seem like we're treating all four children equally if you adopt that.
And the $375 was, again, based upon Exhibit 4, the interdependent
math. I believe it was her Exhibit 2,
okay,
that had that. Also, on the basic subsistence limitation, I do want to point to the court, the Henke decision, Henke versus Guerrero, 13 Nebraska Appellate 337. It's a 2005 case. In that case, I believe the father in that case had other children, subsequent born children. And the court, in the language of that opinion, looks solely at the amount for one person. He doesn't get all these extra deductions for all these other people in his family.
But in that case, wasn't the court, this court, looking specifically at the retroactive piece when it was evaluating the poverty guidelines? It wasn't considering the poverty guidelines for purposes of establishing child support.
I think you're right, but I don't think I necessarily see a difference there. I think that if you have a second family and you're going to start using a basic subsistence limitation that goes into taking into account three, four, five, six people, then your children in your first case are never going to be treated anywhere near at the same level as the children in the second family. Also, along those lines, in her calculations on Exhibit 2, she takes and comes up with the basic subsistence limitation not only from subtracting out, let me start that over again, her total amount that she comes up with, the $176 per month, not only takes into account the federal poverty guidelines and this basic subsistence limitation that is larger than just for one person. But at the very top of the calculation, she's also given, again, a $375 deduction once again for Quentin. So he's getting double the benefit of basic subsistence. So
you're saying if you go there, it's one or the other.
Right. The other thing I just want to put out there, too, when I was looking at the federal poverty guidelines that Ms. Nichols is addressing, those take and get changed every January of every year. And I know the Nebraska Supreme Court usually adopts our new basic subsistence limitation in February of every year. So I also thought you could read Section 4-218 like it's $973 per month, or if we were in that time period between January and February where the Nebraska Supreme Court hadn't quite yet adopted the new basic subsistence limitation.
The troubling language is that it says for one person.
True.
Right. It just stopped at monthly net without saying that one person. It is a little problematic. Are you aware of, other than the Hanke case that you're referring to, are you aware of any other authority that addresses that additional language?
I am not. Yeah, this is the first time we've ever had this issue come up, actually. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think I'm out of time if you don't have any questions.
Any other questions?
No further questions.
Thank you.
And Ms. Nichols was out of time, is that correct? Thank you, Council. We appreciate it.